Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and here we go with a brand new broadcast week here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room, where Steve from Georgia State and Jug of Punch are early arrivals waiting for you, waiting to welcome you to the madcap merriment that is the zany multimedia real-time extravaganza, otherwise known as the Horn chat room. You will also be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, at being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Must be pleasant out in Northern California today. Good space folding weather. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and the Horn is the home of the resistance, or a home for the resistance that will be taking place over the next 4 to 8 years, or however long the orange monstrosity continues to pollute the idea of self-government. Yes, and the resistance cannot run on love alone, although there's a lot of love, and it is much, much appreciated, just absolutely. Delightful, the outpouring of goodwill and good-natured friendship that is engendered herein. No, we run on your contributions. We do not run on advertising. There is no advertising. We're not going to try to hustle you into buying gold or vacuum cleaners or radios or floors or metal buildings or herbal erection remedies or baldness cures. Sorry, no. You wouldn't buy it anyway because you're not a wingnut right-wing, white-wing audience that is willing to buy into that kind of stupidity. No. So we run on contributions. We try to raise $200 every evening. Sometimes we don't get there. And that leaves us in places like we are this evening, where we have a fundraising goal of some $315. Because the shortfall got knocked down by our contributors, our Horn Family Community Congregation members who are monthly subscribers. It got knocked down over the weekend by a bit, but not entirely. So there we are, $315. And thanks very kindly to Colin in Illinois. Thank you very much for kicking in earlier this evening and taking it down to where it is now. Thank you very much indeed, as well as to our monthly subscribers. And remember, courtesy of Joan in Tallahassee, there is a premium offer on the table. If you become a new subscriber to the Horn, at whatever amount you choose, be it $5, $10, $100, $1 million, Mr. Soros, yeah. Okay, George, that's fine. It doesn't have to be $1 million. Look, $1,000, George. You won't even miss it, and you'll be support. You'll get more out of that than you did out of the $9 million you gave to Hillary Clinton or whatever it was. So, George, all you do is you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you click on the Contribute tab, you tick the little box there that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, you fill out all the stuff except for the part about where you work and what you do and why you do it and who you do it for. We don't care. And it's not that we don't care. It's that we aren't interested in that sort of data. But then you just get to the next screen, you make your decisions, and ba-boom, there we go. And that's how that works. I'm being told Rick Smith, my buddy Rick Smith, is still streaming, so apparently let me just check in with him real quick. Okay, I've notified him. Thanks for letting me know. Yeah, appreciate it. But anyway, we run on contributions, plain and simple. And we've got $315 to raise this evening to keep from getting into an even deeper hole come Titanic Tuesday. Okay, so hopefully folks will know that I've done that. Okay, well, I guess we're going to do this again. Hold on, stand by. Okay, so I'm told that Rick has released the stream. Thank you, Rick. And we are going again. We'll just take as read the top of the hour, you know, intro music. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, yada, yada, yada. Contributions, no advertising. Go play in the chat room thing. Except to say that, yeah, we've got a $315 fundraising goal. And again, thanks to Colin for helping knock it down as far as it has been knocked down. We need to raise $315 tonight just to keep things going. And hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later over at the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Hi, Agnes.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine.
I'm a little frustrated, but I'll be okay.
Are you all right?
I'm a little frustrated.
Well, I just wanted to break in and say Merry Festivus to everybody, and we send our love, and thanks for being here with us.
Absolutely.
We really, really enjoy being here with you.
Yes, we do. We look forward to this time of evening every evening.
Yes, we do. Now, what are you frustrated about?
Well, I mean, the stream.
Is it being cranky?
No, it's just that Rick forgot to click the magic button that let me have the stream back.
I've had problems myself with that magic button.
I know.
So it's nothing.
Sometimes
to be
the magic isn't so
about.
Magical.
Hey, you have no idea.
You just sit back, you take a big drink of Fresca, and you move on.
You smile.
You want a Fresca?
Yeah, and you get into the conversation mode. Come on, baby, what's wrong?
Yeah.
All right. Bye, everybody. I love you all too.
She does. She really, really does. So, it's Moran Monday. Yes. And God knows we've got Morans to work with. I mentioned during the part of the intro that you didn't hear we don't hustle pills that will grow hair on your head or anywhere else or make things stand proudly up like a flagpole. Yeah, right. And there's a certain amount of... Because, you know, that stuff's crap. Right? Yeah. As we're finding out, and as one child found out, much to his mortality... I've been told from time to time that the province of Alberta in Canada is kind of like, oh, I don't know, Texas, Alabama, and West Virginia all sort of rolled together, in one great big lump of dumb. We have friends in Alberta as well, and that's not all inclusive. So, you know, just so we understand each other. But over the last couple of years, there have been a series of trials in Canada, and they almost always seem to come out of Alberta, Calgary, of parents who decided to treat their children with what is called alternative medicine, which actually isn't medicine at all. Because alternative medicine that's been scientifically proven to work is just called medicine. But in this case, a little fella, 7-year-old guy, developed a strep infection, streptococcus. Strep throat, that sort of thing. It's a bacterial infection. It can be dangerous, but with the use of modern medicine, it usually isn't. However, Tamara Lovett is, she's on trial right now. This is Morin Monday, remember? She's on trial right now because when her son came down sick, back in March 2013, she treated streptococcus with dandelion tea and oil of oregano. And she did so for about 10 days, and then the boy got all dead. Because alternative medicine. And that's not the lead story for Morin Monday by any stretch of the imagination. But it reminded me, why, among other things, I mean, we're not out there soliciting their business, but, you know, why we don't sell or ask you to purchase herbal hair regrowth tonics and the like. It's 19th century patent medicine all over again. But no, that's not that's not where Morin Monday begins by any stretch of the imagination. No. No, Morin Monday, well, Morin Monday begins like this.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Morin Monday on the Horn. Here, just a few simple paces away from the Carnival Midway, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will find Morins of all description. Morins to shock the conscience, bewilder the mind. We've got them all. Ninthers, deathers, birthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, trumpanzees. Indeed, indeed. We've got them all. The entire Republican panoply, the economically anxious, you name it. We've got it right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. And yes, for less than 15 cents an hour, 17 cents, it's a little bitty bit of money per hour of programming for a $10 a month monthly contributor subscriber. You have access to it all, each and every one of them. Now, a gentle reminder, if you've won an iguana over there throwing ping pong balls at a fishbowl, you'll want to keep a close hand on it as you go through the Morin Monday tent. You'll also want to keep a close hand on your purse, your wallet, your European messenger bag, your children, your pets, besides the iguana, the goldfish. You know why? Because the Morins can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morins. Indeed, indeed, indeed. Because you can't tell the Morins without a program, and this here is the program that tells the Morins you just can't tell them much. No, sir, no, sir, no, sir. So come on in, come on in. The ticket price is next to nothing at all. Well, it isn't. It's nothing, really. Because we got Morins oh plenty. Armpits, right? Right. Yeah. there was good news out of the Great Plains over the weekend. News well worthy of celebration. The Army Corps of Engineers, well, the Obama administration, trying to do something decent on the way out the door. The Army Corps of Engineers said they were not going to grant the easement for the Dakota Access Pipeline to go underneath the Missouri River, thereby putting a stop to the Dakota Access Pipeline and triggering a great deal of righteous and well-deserved celebration out at the Ocheti Sakowin camp near Cannonball, North Dakota. Good celebration. Happy celebration. Thankful celebration. But there's also a recognition, and this is probably the sobering part of it. This is where the morans come in. Energy Transfer Partners says, easements? We don't need no stinking easements. They said they will not, well, let's put it this way. This is nothing new from this administration, since over the last 4 months, the administration has demonstrated by its action and inaction that it intended to delay a decision in this matter until President Obama is out of office. For more than 3 years now, you can almost hear the tears, can't you? For more than 3 years now, Dakota Access Pipeline has done nothing but play by the rules. Yeah, because, see, access to clean drinking water is just a damn game. And it's they're playing. They're not deadly serious in their intent to drive a goddamn pipeline under the Missouri River that has the potential to ruin clean drinking water for millions and millions and millions of American citizens, including the people who live on the Standing Rock Reservation. Mm-hmm. But they're playing. We played by the rules. Uh-huh. The Corps review process and its decisions have been ratified by two federal courts. The Army Corps confirmed this again today when it stated its policy decision does not alter the Army's position that the Corps' prior review and actions have comported with legal requirements. Poor babies. In spite of consistently stating that at every turn that the permit for the crossing of the Missouri River at Lake Oahe, granted in July 2016, comported with all legal requirements, including the use of an environmental assessment rather than an environmental impact statement, the Army Corps now seeks to engage in additional review and analysis of alternative locations for the pipeline. Yeah, hey, all those nasty little trolls from Bismarck who are, build the damn pipeline! Or however it is they talk up there. Well, let's remember the pipeline route was originally supposed to go near Bismarck, but none of the white people wanted it to go through near Bismarck. You know, NIMBY. Not in my backyard. Put it in the Indians' backyard. Screw their water up. Mm-hmm. And yet you don't see the... You don't see all those trolls out there saying, come on, build it over here. So the upshot is, Energy Transfer Partners, well, as stated all along, ETP and SXL are fully committed to ensuring that this vital project is brought to completion and fully expect to complete construction of the pipeline without any additional rerouting in and around Lake Oahe. Nothing this administration has done today changes that in any way. In other words, they're going to do it. They don't care. They'll violate the law if they have to, because you know what? The fines don't amount to a hill of beans compared to the money they expect to make by running oil through that filthy pipeline. But there's a little art of word-knowing stuff going on here. This vital project. Vital to whom? It's not vital to the people at Standing Rock. It is not vital to the people of the United States who use gasoline. It's not vital to the 18, 19, 20 million, however many millions of people who stand to have their water ruined when, not if, when the pipeline ruptures. So, vital to whom? Vital to energy transfer partners and their investors, like Donald Trump, who has between $500,000 and $1 million invested in the pipeline, and thus has an immediate, undeniable conflict of interest the instant that he becomes president of the United States, and maybe even now. So to call that pipeline vital is a tell. It's a lie. It's telling a lie. Because nobody needs it. The United States doesn't need it. We don't need it for our energy security. We don't need the oil that's going to flow through it. It's only about profit. Remember, the oil that they're going to pump through it, it costs about production of Bakken shale crude is predicated somewhere around $90 a barrel. And oil is not at $90 a barrel. They want to build this pipeline because they want to build the pipeline. Because one of these days, they plan on oil going back above $90 an hour, bucks a barrel. Then the production up in the Bakken fields will go back through the roof. The boom and bust economy will turn boom again. People will be living in single wide trailers somewhere near Williston and paying, you know, $3,000 a month rent on them. The hookers will come back. Topless coffee shop will reopen. And happy days will be here again. But there is no cogent argument that this pipeline is in any sense vital to anybody except the avaricious bastards who want more money at the expense of the health and well-being of the people who will have to live with it, and who themselves will not live anywhere near it. I mean, remember, the CEO of Energy Transfer Partners lives on a cul-de-sac in Dallas, for God's sakes. And tucked away inside all of this is another little curiosity. And it's a sort of a discussion of the nature of civil society and enlightened self-governance. We have seen this particular issue on display in other fora, but here it is again. Energy Transfer Partners can tell the federal government and the people, we the people of the United States, who are the federal government, to go pound sand. Because the fines that are attached to violating the law are minimal, inconsequential. It's cheaper to violate the law than it is to obey it. And rest assured, vast armies of militarized police, phalanges of National Guard troopers armed to the teeth, will not stand and prevent the pipeline from going under the river at Lake Oahe. The government will not gas the guys running the dozers and the drills, the pipeliners. They'll only do that to unarmed, nonviolent, indigenous peoples and their allies. Nonetheless, the Obama administration finally understood that things had gotten very real in a real hurry when all those veterans showed up out there, claiming as they were that they were prepared to protect the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And make no mistake, Energy Transfer Partners and its allies and that guy who lives on the cul-de-sac in Dallas are enemies domestic. In point of fact, they are enemies of life on planet Earth. And that is why the water protectors took the stand that they did. But if you want to keep a list of things we need to work on if we ever get good government back, this is one of them. Namely, we have to have laws that whose penalties are sufficient to provide incentive not to violate them. Don Blankenship, for instance, is in a federal club fed facility somewhere in California right now because it's only a misdemeanor to violate safety regulations in a coal mine that wind up incinerating 29 human beings. You might recall that he was charged, although acquitted, of trying to rip off his shareholders. That was a felony. But violating safety regulations that get 29 people incinerated past recognition as formerly having been human beings, not a felony. It's just a misdemeanor. And this is the same thing. And so Energy Transfer Partners says, screw you. We're going to build the pipeline where we say we're going to build the pipeline because you won't stop us. Lame duck Obama. Quack. And they know that as soon as Benito Cheeto gets into office, he'll undo it all. And we'll start roasting the planet a little hotter. Oopsie. See how it works? They're predators. Pure and simple predators. And it does get a little bit worse. When it comes to Quislings, when it comes to people with a D behind their name who are such in name only, two names immediately come to mind. The first, of course, is Baloney Joe Manchin, who has never voted for any Democrat that did not have the last name Manchin, and who would sell out the bones of his ancient sainted granny if a coal company told him to. He was mentioned as Secretary of Energy, and now the Trump team there in New York have mentioned him as a candidate for, no, really, I'm not kidding. This fills me with a level of dread that I haven't felt since, like, an Algebra 2 final in ninth grade that I knew I was going to fail. Secretary of State. Yeah, I think they're just mashing up little bits of Wonder Bread and dipping it in water and throwing it at the wall, seeing what sticks. But no, he really was. But the other person who is the other leading Quisling Democrat comes from North Dakota. Her name is Heidi Heitkamp. She's the one who shivved America. She's the one who shivved America in regard to the gun show loophole in the aftermath of the Sandy Hook shooting. Well, she's got her shiv out now, and I'm going to the phones in just a second here because. Boss Man Wayne's on the line, and we don't get to talk to Boss Man Wayne a lot. But I want to run this clip real quick, just to put a little bow on the story. She's putting the shiv in her own constituents at Standing Rock. Here we go. I hope. Maybe.
I like to think that the reason why I got into national politics was to bring some common sense and some North Dakota values and the ability to actually get things done. And, you know, with your help, last year we were able to get oil exports. We're hearing now reports that we're exporting record barrels of oil. That's huge for our economy, huge for our area, huge for our allies. And so we can get things done if we work across the aisle, if we actually approach things from common sense, you know, positions that I think make economic sense for the people. And so, you know, we've been doing some good work, I think, and that's being recognized.
What you talk about when you did meet, I mean, are we going to hear, did you just talk specific positions in the Trump administration? And is it likely that you would accept one?
You know, what we did is we spent a lot of time talking about jobs. And the myopic focus on how he's going to get American workers back into the workplace.
Wait, myopic focus is not usually used as a positive term because myopia is, of course, a disease or disability of the eye. But, well, the goddess of irony is on the job, but we haven't, just stand by.
Provide more economic security for Americans who, as we like to say in North Dakota, shower at night, don't shower in the morning. You know, and that was completely enjoyable because it spanned, once you start with the American worker and once you start with the American people, it spans into all areas. And so we spent a lot of time about talking about economic development, talking about energy, talking about regulation and what we need to do there. So it really was a very substantive discussion without a lot of details on, you know, positions in the cabinet.
Yeah. She says, I understand the frustration of the protesters. I just think this fight is not winnable. But she said she still wants to improve living conditions on the res. Well, living conditions on the res are not going to improve by any measure if they don't have clean drinking water. If their tribal sovereignty has been violated again, if another treaty has been broken again, it's just not winnable. Well, lady, whether you realize it or not, they're winning, and they're going to keep winning because there's no alternative. Losing is not an alternative. It's win or die. And of course, Heidi Heitkamp, in her privileged life, has never faced a situation, anything like that. Now, let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Boss Man Wayne. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, man. How you doing?
You know, I'm pretty good. I admire the daylights out of the people who stood up out in North Dakota. That right there, Wayne, is true Americanism.
Oh, it surely is. Well, and them veterans made me even prouder to be a veteran. And today, apologizing to the First Nation people, that was pretty cool, man. That was pretty cool. Did you see that?
I saw word of it, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, if anyone's owed an apology in this whole thing, it certainly should start with Native Americans, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, we could start apologizing now and not stop for 500 years and still have some apologizing left to do.
Yes, that's very true, very true. So,
But
I heard you talking about my favorite senator a little bit ago.
Baloney Joe?
Joe Manchin, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Joe Manchin's the whole problem with the Democratic Party in West Virginia.
Well, he killed it.
Yeah, he did kill it. You know, so a long time ago, she popped her lovely little head into the fracas, too. Somebody told me a long time ago when Charlotte Pritt beat Joe Manchin.
1996.
Joe Manchin vowed to destroy the Democratic Party. And I never found out for sure if that story was true, but it surely seems to be his intentions, and he has succeeded. And, you know, the only way Democrats and organized labor are ever going to win another election is going to have to involve getting rid of Manchin and his whole Marion County crew.
Well, there's no doubt about it, because how many elections have they lost now, Wayne?
Since Manchin became governor in 2005.
Yeah.
Larry Puccio became his chief of staff. In 2010, Joe Manchin became senator and installed Puccio as chairman of the Democratic Party in West Virginia. Since 2010, we've lost two congressional district seats. We've lost the attorney general.
A U.S. senator.
Two U.S. senator. Two Supreme Court seats. It was 10 senators. Now I think it's, 14?
Yeah. Secretary of State. Secretary of Agriculture.
We've lost everything. And so at our convention this fall, after our convention was the State Executive Committee meeting. And the purpose of that meeting was to elect a new head of the Democratic Party in West Virginia, a new chair. And Chris Regan, a young, smart, progressive attorney from Wheeling, was running to be the new chair of the Democratic Party. And I honestly believe I was in his camp 100%. I worked my butt off to help to try to get him elected. And I honestly and truly think that we had that one. You know, I know Manchin, if you remember, Manchin canceled his plans to come to the Democratic convention. And I believe he canceled his plans because he knew damn well he was going to lose. But then the Thursday before the election, the convention was Friday and Saturday. After the convention was the State Executive Committee meeting to elect new officers. The Thursday before that Saturday, the AFL-CIO sent a letter to every member of the executive committee with their endorsements for the leaders of the Democratic Party. And they included Belinda Biafort, who has been there for many, many years, is Joe Manchin's and Larry Puccio's right-hand person, served under Puccio for all those years. Bill Laird, Senator Bill Laird, who quit the Senate, refused to run for the Senate, but ran for vice chair. I lost a lot of respect for the man, I'm going to tell you. Because if he didn't know he was being used, then he's stupid. And I know him, and he's not stupid. He just let him, well. And anyway, so the vote came up, and we came up short. But I honestly, truly believe before that letter was sent out, we would have won.
Well, so, there's an abundance of blame to go around.
Right. Well, I'm not saying we would have won the election.
No. But the party leadership would have changed, and it would have been more of a reflection of the work that was actually done in the convention hall.
That's exactly right. And I think we wouldn't have lost. I'm not saying we won. We would have won everything. But I think our losses would be a lot less significant had we changed. Because along with Chris Regan came an awful lot of Bernie supporters. An awful lot. And an awful lot of Bernie supporters were made to feel unwelcome by Belinda and her crew. And, you know, so a lot of them end up voting third party. Now, not that would have had any damn effect here, because did you see the numbers today?
No.
West Virginia, and we knew this anyway, but West Virginia was the highest supporter. West Virginia had the highest percentage of supporters for Donald Trump than any state in the union.
And hence why the mention of Baloney Joe. I mean, Secretary of State, Wayne, really?
I know. Natalie Tennant?
No. I mean the Trump team saying that they're considering Baloney Joe for Secretary of State.
He's not qualified to be a senator, for Christ almighty.
He's not qualified to be a dog catcher.
No, I mean, well, he's just a rich coal guy, rich white coal guy. Now, that white's real important, too. We got to remember that.
It confers a little privilege on the rich part, among other things.
Yeah, it does. You know, and I mean, he's, the guy's never been a Democrat. He's never been a Democrat. The Manchin family's the one, you know, they started Democrats for Underwood. They started Democrats for Arch Moore before that. Well, his uncle did. What was his uncle's name?
A. James.
Yeah, A. J. Manchin.
Let us purge our proud peaks of these jumbled jungles of junkery. Yeah, that A. James Manchin.
Yeah, that one, yeah. And I honestly, well, we need to make a change. I'm trying to get a hold of a different, the executive committee. Now, if you read the bylaws and the rules and bylaws of the Democratic committee or party in West Virginia, the state executive committee is the supreme authority of the Democratic Party. But leader Joe Manchin's leadership team refuses to follow instructions that they were given by the executive committee. And the executive committee needs to get some balls and call a special meeting.
That's an old Slavic word. That's an old, isn't it? That's an old Serbian word, isn't it? Balls?
Yeah, well, the old Serbian word is embolden.
Oh, embolden, yes. To give balls.
To give balls, yeah. And they're really emboldened now, I'm going to tell you.
Well, I mean, you know, we talk about what's going on in West Virginia, and I say time and again that you know, we are the canary in the coal mine as far as the Democratic Party is concerned. And we, you know, we saw play out nationally what happened in West Virginia over the last two election cycles. And Wayne, I don't... It's not that I don't understand how we got here, because I think I understand at least part of it. But why didn't the smart people, the people who tell us that they're so star-spangled smart, why didn't they see it coming? I mean, how many different places did traditionally Democratic organizations fail, and not just fail, but fail so spectacularly?
Yeah, they also had a lot of help too. You know, they had a lot of help with voter suppression and, you know, these purging of voter rolls and, you know, limiting voting places, eliminating early days of voting, eliminate, you know, this precinct used to have 25 voting places. Now it has 2. You know, that's another way they won. And that's something that we tend to, well, ignore. We don't, you know, number one, first thing that ever has to happen, and I don't know how we're going to do it with these people, won't happen until Democrats are back in control. But states do not conduct national elections. There are rules for elections that are federal rules, and everybody has to follow them same rules. And that, you know, for so many thousand people, you got to have a voting place for, well, just basic rules. You can't turn around and just start determining that a bunch of people don't deserve to vote anymore. I mean, these purges for, and, well, they, I'm telling you, that's how they beat us in a lot of places. When people can't vote, then you're not going to get the true feeling. Well, you did, you know. Fact of the matter is, Hillary Clinton is, what, $2.6 million or votes ahead?
Yeah.
You know, so we won.
And climbing.
That's something we can never forget either.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Win.
Yeah, Trump's, we got 4 years of Trump or whomever. But there's no.
I think it's going to be whomever too.
But there's no legitimacy to him. I mean, at this point in time, based on his present behavior, I got to figure he's going to have a stroke tweeting one of these 3 a.m.s.
I do too.
I mean, he got mad at Saturday Night Live again.
Yeah, I know. That's the most important thing in the world.
I see these constitutional experts out there who say things like, well, you know, he's got so many conflicts of interest, he's bound to be impeached. By whom? Impeachment arises solely in the House of Representatives.
That it does. And we don't have a majority there.
We don't have a majority of IQs above freezing in the House of Representatives right now.
No, we don't.
But, you know, I keep coming back to the idea of the resistance. And, you know, it feels a little bit like this independent progressive broadcast experiment that you started so many years ago. You know, we looked to the people who traditionally are supposed to be the bastions and bulwarks of progressivism. And as I've said before, you and I have had some of the finest doors in finest progressive doors in America slammed in our faces, and it's not just us. So
no, it ain't just us.
I mean,
that's a trouble with with the Democratic Party altogether too. There's, you know, in Raleigh County setting up headquarters, being on the Democrat and. You know, there's something that somebody has to do. We can't just sit back. We have to resist at every point. And at the same time, we have to identify people that will run for their county executive committees and people that will run for the state executive committees. And all those offices are up in 2018. Now, it all depends on how your county is set up. Raleigh County is set up. It has 3 magisterial districts. So our executive committee is made up of 2 men and 2 women from each senatorial or each magisterial district. So we have 12. Now, other counties, and I'm going to contact the Secretary of State because I'd really like to find out this information. I don't know how all the other counties are set up. Some counties have, instead of magisterial districts, they have what they call executive districts. And they have, well, more than three. So I think it's one man and one woman from each executive district or magisterial district. So they're all set up a little bit differently, and I'd like to find out how that goes. But we still, regardless, we need people to run for those executive committees in their county. And then the state executive committee, which according to the bylaws is the supreme authority of the Democratic Party, is made up of two men and two women from each senatorial district in the state. There are 17 senatorial districts. We have to get people to run for those. And people that are participate, that will participate and want to be active, not just people that want to be able to say, oh, yeah, well, I'm on the executive committee. Oh, do you ever go to meetings? Nah.
A lot of people, and because nobody really knows what they do, a lot of people don't know how much work goes into it. You know, you and I work together fairly closely over the course of any given year. And in any election year, I have seen you drive yourself to a point of exhaustion, and I've seen other people do the same thing, because it's one of those situations where there's a lot of heavy lifting to be done, and not a lot of people. There's a lot of people that want to yell heave and hoe, but a lot fewer who actually want to do the heaving.
Right, a lot of people want to tell you what you should do. You know what you should do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you show me?
But, so, I mean, here in West Virginia, for instance, we've seen the prevailing wage get disappeared. We've seen right to work imposed.
Yep.
And while there was a legal challenge to it, I mean, what?
It really doesn't matter. I mean, you know, it's been delayed now to 2017, but remember, these people control the House and the Senate, and the governor, you know, I mean, I'm glad Bill Cole lost, but the governor's nobody. I don't give a damn who the governor is. If I could control the Senate and the House, we could pass whatever we want and override any governor's veto. When you can override a veto with a simple majority, it's not real hard to do. So the governor really doesn't matter, as far as I'm concerned. We need, you know, to concentrate on the Senate and the House. And, of course, you know, we thought, well, we were pretty convinced that we were going to win the Senate, at least. But they gained four seats. They gained four seats.
Yeah, it went from bad to worse.
Yeah. I mean, we knocked off, I don't know, I know one Republican, maybe more. But in the end, they ended up with four more seats. Now they have 22 and we have 12. You know, it was 18-16 last year.
Yeah, now, and they'll, and that means come January, they'll really have the bit in their teeth.
Right.
And
labor, you talk about getting our ass kicked.
Well, and that's kind of the next question. I've been sort of gently trying to move in that direction. You've worked in West Virginia's labor movement for a very long time.
Yep.
And you've seen it effective and you've seen it ineffective. Is it safe to say that labor in West Virginia is as ineffective right now as it has ever been?
That is very safe to say, and that's all because they're tied too close to Joe Manchin. You know, I don't know. I worked with these people for over 18 years, and, you know, I fought with a lot of them for 18 years, too, and still am. I don't know. I guess none of them ever saw The Godfather or something. you know, had they watched closely, Joe Manchin is supposed to be in Labor's pocket. Labor isn't supposed to be in Joe Manchin's pocket. And that's where it is in West Virginia. I'm sorry, I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but that's the truth. And our current leaders have led us there. They're the ones that thought they could deal with Republicans. And because of that, we have what we have now.
And I was going to say, and what have they gotten for their trouble? What has cooperating with Republicans gotten Labor in West Virginia?
It's they did what we're trying to do, not do with Trump, and that's normalize them. They made the Republicans, you know, like we had our final, conference call of the year the other day, the labor councils. You know, there's 13 labor councils in the state. I'm treasurer and COPE director, Committee on Political Education for South Central Labor Council. But that's only one of 13. And we had our last year in conference call after the election. And, you know, more or less, well, we got to deal with what we got now. So we got to go down there and see what kind of deals we can make. And I said, you're out of your damn mind. I couldn't agree with you less. If we're not going to go down there and try to disrupt every damn thing they do, then we're not doing the right thing. And as I said, if part of the call with this is to go down there and make friends, you can count me out. Because I'm not making friends with any. How do you make friends with people that want to destroy every goddamn thing you worked for all your life? How do you make friends with those people?
And the thing is, I don't think that's a rhetorical question, Wayne, because I'm asking the same question here. I know other people are as well, because, you know, how many times do you extend an olive branch and draw back a bloody stump before you actually learn something? But you're saying this, but it doesn't sound to me like the exalted high leadership has learned any sort of lesson out of this, that there's some other explanation besides we screwed up. You know, I know you come from a tradition that says measure twice before you cut once. But it seems to me like what I'm hearing you say is that they just moved in with hacksaws and chisels and didn't and left the tape measure at home.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, we've got to. Well, we got to regroup, and we need new leadership. You know, as far as labor goes, the head of the AFL-CIO is retiring at the end of the year. You know, Josh Swords will take his place. So a lot of that probably, you know, I don't know how things are going to change as far as that goes. You know, the building trades is a powerful force, but building trades, and which is one of the things I argued with them for so many years, is, well, it's just like Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin, and I've known Joe Manchin for many years.
Yeah, first name basis.
Yeah, you know, I drank beer with Joe Manchin when he was going to run for governor the first time, and. Well, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but.
Well,
Joe Manchin, you know, Joe Manchin used to really be against prevailing wage. In fact, Joe Manchin was one of the first people to start talking about right to work. And, but he got with trades, and trades showed him, you know, that this was a good thing, prevailing wage. And he became a supporter. Now, Joe Manchin became quite a supporter of prevailing wage. And when he was governor, I mean, that guy would get on phones with company executives that were, you know, talking about coming here to build a factory or build a whatever. And he would encourage them to use building trades people, to use union trades people and pay the rate. And that was great. That was great. But what that, with labor, what that meant was, okay, as long as you're on our side with prevailing wage, we don't care who else you screw. I mean, you know, you don't like the teachers, you want to give the teachers this, you want to take this away from the teachers, we don't care. As long as you like prevailing wage.
Well, I remember back in 2005 when he said, you know, labor and I may not always agree, but if you support me, you'll always have a seat at the table.
Yeah.
What did that turn out to mean? I mean, what does that mean in 2006?
It means sometimes you don't get a plate.
Yeah, you don't get a plate, you don't get silverware. You
might have a seat, but that's all you're going to get.
And you know, I don't think you're alone in your sense that this alleged deal making is a loser. I just got a note here saying I heard that make deal shit last session. It didn't work. Fuck 'em.
That's exactly right. How do you make deals with the devil? And that's what you're doing. Like I said, how do you make deals with somebody that wants to take away everything you worked for all your life?
So where does this go? I mean, when do they learn, Wayne?
Is it
just a matter of as long as the leadership's check continues to clear, they won't learn?
Well, and it seems like that. And then, you know, right, we're going to get right to work. Okay, I mean, we might stall it for a while here, and you know, the court may even rule in our favor, but then it'll be challenged. And where's it going to go? To our Supreme Court. Now, what do you think the chances of us winning in our current Supreme Court are?
Yeah, zero.
Zero. You know, it's coming. So, and you know, and I don't know that it's going to take very long. Probably by the end of next year or the middle of the year, we'll be a right-to-work state. Prevailing wage will not be coming back.
And so what then happens to whatever power, say the building trades, or for that matter, organized labor generally, has in West Virginia?
It's going to diminish.
Does it go down to a slope where eventually it's like, you know, near zero?
I don't see where it's very far from that now. Do you?
No, I don't. And that's what's frightening. That's, you know, that's why I said a little bit ago that the traditional centers of progressive organizing are in bad trouble, not just in West Virginia, but nationally.
Nationally. And, you know, not with what the Republicans did this time with all three of them, we're going to have national right to work. You know, Rand Paul introduced national right to work, I don't know, a few years ago. And it's always hanging around. Well, it's going to go someplace now. We're going to have national right to work.
Something else I heard you say a couple of minutes ago, Wayne. You said that labor took the position that as long as you want to screw somebody else, we'll stay out of the fight as long as you're not screwing us.
And that's the way I see it.
And
I'm not saying everybody in labor feels that way. I'm saying our
leadership.
Our leaders felt that way in building trade.
And that's something I've put forward by way of argument in these last few weeks, especially since the election, is that the insularity, the idea that, you know, that there are these little pockets of, okay, I'm pro labor, okay, I'm pro environment, okay, I'm pro women's rights, okay, I'm pro LGBTQ rights, okay, and that everybody just lives in their little bubbles where they work on their issues, all the while not realizing that a labor issue turns out to be an environmentalist's issue, turns out to be a women's rights issue, turns out to be. And the question is, how do you reverse that? Because you're right, the rank and file worked its ass off in this election. And got nothing for their troubles. but and you know what, the LGBTQ worked their ass off, and the environmentalists worked their ass off, and they all worked their ass off in separate pockets and separate corners, in many senses preaching to their own choirs. Doesn't it seem like somewhere along the way that has to change?
Yeah, it does have to change. You know, we have to learn that, you know, well, we are our brother's keepers. And until we realize that, until we realize that we have to be worried about the welfare of our neighbors, and no matter what color they are, or, you know, our country and our communities as a whole, that, you know, we can't be out just for ourselves.
I think there's a teachable moment in what we saw out with the no DAPL. There's not a single big organization in this country that could have done that. The AFL-CIO could not have accomplished that. The Sierra Club could not have accomplished that. The National Organization for Women could not have accomplished that. The Human Rights Campaign could not have accomplished that. There's a grassroots lesson there, that if the leadership of these organizations want their organizations to have any relevance whatsoever, they must learn. Because it's all top down, and that's not going to work in a 4 to 8 year period where there must be a resistance. Or am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. You're not crazy. People, you know, like, well, I've said a couple times on Facebook, in 6 months to a year, you're not going to be able to find anybody that voted for Donald Trump. You know, the coal miners aren't going back to work. The steel mills aren't going to rebuild. And, you know, if we do an infrastructure thing, the first thing they'll do is they'll suspend Davis-Bacon. Davis-Bacon will not apply to any new infrastructure projects.
So any new infrastructure projects will be built on shit wages.
Exactly.
Well, you know,
and then you know what Trump's plan is. You know, is to let individuals do it and then give them tax breaks. And then they could set up toll roads and bullshit like that. Or corporate-owned water treatment plants. Well, we already got them.
Yeah, that worked out real well a couple of years ago.
West Virginia American Water, German.
Gerald...
You know, there's all kinds of...
Gerald just pointed out something to me. He said, I can tell you that since prevailing wage has been axed, the laborers working under the heavy highway agreement have lost about $3 an hour and their annuity.
Yes.
And that's just in, you know, a year or so's time.
Yeah, and I think there's more of, I think, let me find out before I say that. I wouldn't be surprised if there's not another pay cut coming. Oh, I know what it was. I believe that the laborers have signed on to a 5-year wage freeze. Let me check that out.
Hard time's coming.
Yeah, but, you know, well, I don't see where that was a good move at all. You know, not there.
Yeah, Gerald says you're correct in that. Gerald says you're correct.
Okay. I knew they were considering it. I don't know if that went into effect. You know, like a lot of people in the trades, you know, the elimination of prevailing wage didn't affect our pay, union people's pay, so far, because we're working under contracts that we negotiated. And, you know, like even before the repeal of prevailing wage came into effect, there are certain contractors, what's it called? the multi-craft agreement. There's, I don't know, 7 or 9 crafts involved. Carpenters, painters, different crafts. Signed a 5-year contract, a brand new 5-year contract, in which I think the average, you get $1 an hour a year, I think, raise. And so right now, jobs we're on, I mean, we're getting paid what we always got paid and everything else. Where it's going to affect us is now everybody can underbid us because there's no prevailing wage. And all the other companies know exactly where we are because they know what our wages are. You know, our wages are public information, our wages and benefits. So they get to bid a couple percent less and they get the job and don't have to pay anywhere near the wages. Now we don't have the job. So it's not going to be too long before our contractors come back to us and say, we have to renegotiate this contract.
And in the meantime, what happens to the skills necessary to do these things? I mean, you can't just take a 16-year-old kid who drops out of high school and put him out on a highway job or, you know, building a new cancer center.
Well, you know, the really skilled guys will go to where the good pay is. And there'll always be some good paying jobs because they'll always, you know, you can't build massive stuff with unskilled people. You just can't do that. So I don't know. The future don't look real bright, but we got to fight them at every turn. That's just all there is to it. There's an election every 2 years. People have to become involved. You can't sit back on your hands anymore and complain. You got to get out. Find out when your Democratic Party meetings are. Just every county, there might be a council missing. I know Monroe County no longer even has a Democratic Executive Committee in their county. Pocahontas County, I think, just got one this year. But anyway, people need to get involved. All this, you know, politics affects every aspect of your life. I know a lot of people don't want to believe that, but that is, well, that's a God's honest truth. Every aspect of your life is affected by politics. And we need to elect people that are going to start putting the people first, not just, what Bernie said 1 million times over.
And so as we go forward, do we go forward in spite of failed leadership? Or, I mean,
yeah, we do.
I mean, do you do an end run?
Well, I'll tell you what, remember the people that go to Washington, D.C. are up for election every 2 years. Well, an awful lot of them are up every 2 years. Other ones are up every 6 years. The House of Representatives, you know, everybody should be calling their congressional member. I don't give a damn if they're a Democrat or a Republican, and tell them that, you know, come out and openly oppose the appointment of Steve Bannon as chief counsel. That they want their representative to come out and publicly oppose Jeff Sessions for attorney general. Everybody could do that. You could do that all over this country. And if enough people conduct their congressman, shit will change, believe me. Because the most important thing to all of these people is getting reelected. And if we could put enough pressure on them with phone calls, emails, letters to the editor, I think we could change things. But if people just want to sit back and bitch and wring their hands and say there ain't nothing we could do, well, there's lots of things we could do. You know, everybody carries one of these damn things in their pocket. It doesn't take any time to make a phone call and tell your congressman how you feel. about any particular subject and how you would like them to vote on that particular bill. No. The people got the power. They got all the money. But the fact of the matter is, whether you got $1 billion or $100, you got one vote. And if we exercised our right to vote and got involved, we wouldn't have the problems that we have. It's just that damn simple.
Vote now before they figure out a way to take it away.
Exactly. We have to fight that too. What do they call it? Purging.
Yeah.
You know, they come up with, they invent. Well, and then that's why elections has to become a federal law. Because did you see what's his title? Who's Ken Blackwell?
Oh,
spiritual advisor or something. Oh, what is he?
He's one of his. Yeah, he's on the he's the transition advisor for. Oh God!
I don't know. He made a statement today that the most Christian thing we could do is to cut food stamps.
Oh, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah. Yep. Because God doesn't want a bunch of moochers or some shit. I don't know.
If a man will not work... Well, you know, they stand in their pulpits and they yell that stuff. There's something in the book of Proverbs about if a man will not eat, if a man will not work, neither shall he eat.
Oh.
And they lean on that as a but, you know, it's just barbaric cruelty masquerading as faith.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. You remember that dude? He was the Secretary of State in Ohio.
Oh, yeah, 2004.
He knows how to twist them machines to make them say whatever the hell he wants. Maybe he don't know, but he knows the people that know. He's evil.
Well, I just got a note from Jen in Australia. She said, you know, she said they're doing it from overseas. They're registering their opposition to Trump's conflicts of interest, Steve Bannon and stuff via Democrats abroad. There's a will to resist out there. It becomes a question of organizing and getting people moving in the same direction. And if we don't, Wayne, I mean, we may feel screwed right now, but he ain't even in office yet.
No, I know. And, you know, I am so frightened for my children and grandchildren. It's, you know, and believe me, old people better be frightened, too. I know an awful lot of old people. What's the statistics on that? How many people over 60 voted for Trump?
Oh, God.
There was lots of them.
Yeah, it was stunning.
Yeah, it was stunning. And now these same people are going to bitch when they take away your Social Security and Medicare? Who'd you vote for, you stupid bastard?
Well, but they get away with it, Wayne, because they always use that tried and true statement of, People collecting benefits will not see their benefits affected. So they figured that the people receiving benefits will just turn around and say, well, okay, yeah, let's screw those 50-year-olds instead. Or, hey, the 20-year-olds are all stoned. Let's screw them before they sober up.
Well, it kind of looks like that's what the old people did, ain't it?
It's exactly what they did.
Right. And that pisses me off because I'm an old people, and I don't feel like that. I want everybody to get Social Security. You know, I was 35 once, too, and was thoroughly convinced I would never get Social Security. But I'm going to tell you, I'm digging the hell out of it.
It's pretty cool when you get there.
Yeah, it is. And Medicare, too, man. You just go, you know, whatever's wrong, man. They'll take you, and you don't get a bill. Well, of course, you got to have a supplemental and all that stuff, but it's still a pretty good deal. It's a pretty good deal. And I want everybody to have that, and there's no reason why everybody shouldn't have that or couldn't have that. There's no reason why everybody can't have health insurance either. And they're going to do, what are they going to do to that?
And that's part of the uncertainty that we see unfolding in front of us. Well, I'll tell you what, you and I don't talk a whole lot on the air, but it's always so damn good when you do call in. I get inspired and I get excited, and even in with things the way they are now, you know, there's always a little tiny spark of hope that lives down there, and
you can never give up, man.
You can never give up.
Hillary Clinton, like her or don't like her, that concession speech was a hell of a thing. And, well, don't ever give up.
But I will say this, and be interested to get your take on it. What do you want to bet that somebody somewhere in her inner circle is telling her to run in 2020?
Well, they're out of their mind, and if she even considers it, she's out of her mind. You know, the Clintons are done. You know, and in many ways, I think that may be a good thing for the Democratic Party. You know, maybe we could wrestle away some of the power of the people that they have entrenched there. You know. Now, I don't know. What do you think of Keith Ellison?
I'm of two minds on that. I love what a progressive powerhouse he is. And I certainly think he's. I don't want any retreads or middle of the roaders running the DNC. I want real progressivism in there. So that, for me, that lets Howard Dean and that guy from South Carolina out.
Yeah, who's the guy from South Carolina?
I can't remember his name, but he's a Clinton insider, among other things. And so it'll be same old.
Yeah.
It'll be same old, same old.
Right, and Dean, well, Dean lost me when he joined that lobbying firm.
Yeah.
That he's not a lobbyist for.
So, on the one hand, I'd like Keith Ellison to do it. On the other, though, I feel like we learned a really, really hard lesson about white America this last election cycle, Wayne. And building a 50 state strategy under the leadership of a guy that white America is terrified of twice, you know, black and Muslim. If we want those people back in the camp, I don't know that he's going to get them. And I hate myself for even saying that. But I've had to reevaluate everything I thought about this country. I mean, I knew we were racist. I knew we were racist, but...
I mean...
Go ahead.
The white Americans, they're dying out quick. I mean, I know they mustered a last hurrah here and all that shit, but they're dying out quick. And I mean that in that, you know, the younger people are so much more accepting, I guess would be the word.
I keep trying to tell myself that, but then I watched that speech up in Morgantown the other night with Milo Yiannopoulos, you know, Steve Bannon's right hand man.
Yeah,
I was put on
by the Republicans.
Yeah, but the room was overflowing.
Oh,
with young people, and they were out in the halls, and they were watching in a satellite room on TV. And
but they couldn't all have been white, could they?
Almost entirely.
Wow.
The camera for Breitbart TV found one woman, one young woman who looked like she was of South Asian ancestry. It's not like there were a lot of brown faces in that audience. And the viciousness that's being peddled to them, you know, all this so-called alt-right garbage, which is nothing but neo-Nazi white supremacy, has been marketed specifically to young people.
Oh, God.
I know. You've got the spark of hope, and me, I'm the little ray of sunshine. I realize that. And just a second thing point out, Gerald mentioned this to me. He said, if the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation goes under, and it's likely it will, we can all kiss those nice union pensions goodbye. If the Teamsters pension goes broke, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation is bankrupt.
Exactly. And they, you know, the guarantee program, what do you get anyway?
Not near what you paid in.
No. But I mean, not what you were getting. I think you get, 60% or something like that?
Well, whatever number they establish.
Until they run out.
Yeah.
And then you get nothing. Yeah. Those are all wonderful things to look forward to. If people don't get out of their ass, I don't know. Get involved. We got the power. All we have to do is use it.
Best done now. That's another thing I never want to hear again. I don't want to be told we got to keep our powder dry for something else.
Yeah, right. And I'm tired of being nice, too. Got to call a spade, man. Like I said, how do you worry, you know? How do you make friends with people that want to take everything you work for all your life away from you? Because they want more. Because they need to have more.
Because they want it all.
Right. They want it all.
Well, man, it's been a great conversation. We should probably do this a little more often than we do.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea. I think, you know, I don't know. We got to start. I don't know how many people are listening or whatever, but we have to start getting more people involved, more people to listen. This is a great forum to, well, come and talk about progressive ideas and progressive things and what you're doing and what can you do. And, well, we need to promote this more.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we need to promote this more. We need money. We need to find somebody that'll fund this thing for a little while here.
I put out the call at the beginning of every program for George Soros to become a monthly subscriber, but he just hasn't joined in yet.
Well, we got to talk to him about that or somebody. I mean, there's another thing. Earlier we were talking like the Democratic Party. We're poor too. And, you know, part of that, that's Joe Manchin's fault and these people here. But, I mean, when we were at that convention, the state Democratic Party had, I think, $50,000. The state Democratic Party. I mean, you know, yeah, I'm sorry. It does cost money to do things.
Oh, it sure does.
You can't do any. Huh?
It does.
Yes, it costs a lot of money. And for a state party to have $50,000, that's ridiculous. We have to raise money. But a lot of the Democrats, it's the same thing I like locally in Raleigh County. In Raleigh County, with all the lawyers on Main Street and Neville and Main Street? I mean, you ought to be able to start at one end and at the other end end up with at least $20,000 just from the lawyers that you bumped into in order to have a headquarters or to have, you know. But we have to scrape and, well, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, if people are serious about changing, changing things, they have to start funding the organizations that they're going to use for change. And that's the Democratic Party. That's Head On Radio. That's, you know, progressive causes and things. We have to start getting money to them. You can't just, well, all the lawyers, they want to do all the fundraising as long as they don't have to give it. But, you know, we need these people to start, well, the people that can afford it should start contributing to the party. I mean, you know, we try to start a thing in Raleigh County. I give $25 a month comes off of, Blue something? Act Blue.
Act Blue, yeah.
Yeah. $25 a month to the Democratic Party in Raleigh County. There's three of us that do that. There's millionaire lawyers sit on the meeting, but they can't give $25 a month. I mean.
Oh, that's how they got to be millionaire lawyers.
Yeah.
And that's why you're not.
But, you know, now you are a millionaire, so see, you can give some of the shit up. I mean, really.
Well, yeah, and you know.
You weren't at the picnic.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah, you know. Are the Labor Council put on the big barbecue and all that? We gave away, I got a contractor gave us three $100 gift cards to Kroger's to go grocery shopping.
Yeah.
The first two winners were the two wealthiest men in Raleigh County.
Jeez.
And they put that little $100 card right in their goddamn pocket.
Okay.
I mean, it was appalling. You know, there were people there that could have used that $100 to go shopping. Yeah. You there?
No, I'm here. I have that no. And, you know, the shotgun rifle giveaways and things. But it's true. And I really do want to expand because there's, you know, we invented something pretty special here, Wayne. And that is the idea that we're going to spend more time talking to people who are experts in their own lives than we're going to spend in talking to some supposed expert who has a new book to hustle. I mean, I do that sometimes, but I'd rather talk to the broad base of America than give out marching orders. And there just aren't a whole hell of a lot of programs out there that do that.
No, there aren't.
And so the broader the audience, the community becomes. I hate that word audience. The broader the community comes, the more voices that come into the conversation, and the greater the information processing, the greater the development of ideas.
Yeah, and hopefully, and the greater. We need money, too. That'll raise our ability to get some more money, too, because we need people to contribute money. I know you run this thing on a string and a prayer every damn month, and, well.
Yeah, nobody really knows how thin that string is. But, well, you know, but truth be told, if this was being run on a real budget, you know, we'd be talking about, you know, people having jobs, even.
Yeah, and getting paid.
Yeah. And hopefully benefits and stuff like that. But
nobody's ever got paid.
Yeah, you know, but it seems like until George Soros writes the big money check, or somebody, I mean, he's not the only one.
No, there's lots of George Soros. There's lots of rich progressives. They got to start funding things like this.
Or they can keep on Star Spangled losing.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, but well, that's the thing with, you know, when you have money, you don't. Well.
Yeah, I think I know what
you're saying, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's, when you don't have any, you know, when it doesn't matter that, you know, you're going to be able to make the house payment. There's no concern about that whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going to be able to pay the electric bill and da-da-da-da-da. If the car breaks down, you just go get it fixed, you know. Well, a lot of people aren't in that position.
No. We're talking about people who are choosing between, you know, and it happens every month. They choose between medicine or putting new tires on the car with winter coming.
Exactly. And that's not going to get easier either.
No, it's not. But anyway. But I am getting, I got a note here saying, I got a note here from Kelly saying, Boss Man Wayne's great. We need to hear more from him. So you need to check in a little more often, okay?
I will do that. I will plan on doing that.
All right, man. You have yourself a great evening.
All right. Good night, everybody.
All right. See you, man.
Bye, man.
The one and only Boss Man Wayne. I've never known anybody who works harder for working people for you know us ordinary folks who don't you know who don't not not only who don't know what to do with the shrimp fork but you know don't have one. There's that old saying that if you give me enough give me a big enough lever, I can move the world. You give me a whole bunch of Boss Man Waynes, things will change very, very quickly. Thanks going out here at 18 minutes before the hour. Thanks going out to Keith and to Kelly. We started the evening at $315 to go in fundraising. And we are now at 180, 190. I think I got that right. Yeah, we're at $190 to go in fundraising for the evening. And hopefully we will, you know, because a bunch of bills to pay to keep all of this going. And, you know, we talked on Friday on the front porch a little bit about just, you know, me rebuilding building a new computer. Well, that runs up there pretty quick. But it's not, you know, it's not a matter of getting a better grade of caviar. We're progressives. We're not like that. So when I say there's $190 to go in fundraising, that's very serious. And getting in holes is very serious. You know, I do all the shtick with the ciphering and stuff, 19 at 10, 10 at 19, 2 at 95, that kind of thing. As funnin', but also as a way to show that, I mean, look at the millions that Bernie raised. That's true. I do need a fulcrum with that lever. That's true, Sparky. Maybe. So if okay, I'm working on the metaphor now. Who would be the fulcrum? But it's a matter of. It's a matter of keeping things going. But the fact is, this really is probably one of the biggest information bargains in the progressive sphere. So if you want to, if you can, run over and hit that PayPal button like Steve and Miss Karen and Cletus just did. And we'll knock all of that down. Got $180 to go. Question coming in from Gerald. Who the hell is this state going to sell coal to when all of these evil EPA overstepping regulations are repealed? The power companies have already said they don't want it. So the question remains, where are they going to sell it? Who's going to buy it? Oh, China's going to buy it. Uh-oh, wait, I think I saw something about that. Yeah, by God, I did. Once Benito Cheeto gets his trade war going with China, things could get interesting in a real hurry. Oh, yeah, there it is. There it is. Dateline, December 2nd, 2016, from the Clean Technica website. Huh. Author, Joshua Hill. China's coal prices have soared this year due to domestic supply issues as the country tried to cut overcapacity. But new analysis suggests China's coal demand will stabilize at around 4 billion tons. That's still a lot of planet heating. Demand which will be able to be met easily with domestic supply, leading to the eventual phase out of coal imports. Oh, okay. Maybe we'll sell it to India then. We'll sell it to somebody because coal's so awesome. According to the China Coal Research Institute, there's no obvious growth in coal demand or production costs, which would explain the recent price increase. Rather, government policies intended to combat overcapacity, which eliminated more than 200 million tons of supply, while cutting annual workdays for coal companies from 330 to 276, saw coal output drop 10% subsequently, creating a 222 million ton gap between production and consumption throughout the first three quarters of the year. The even bigger deal, according to this report, is that Chinese coal consumption has been declining over the past several years and fell in the first three quarters of 2016 by 2.4%. In large part, this is because China is very serious about renewable energy. Because, well, they're already paying the price, and being as how they're the Chinese, they know they didn't invent the climate change hoax involving thousands of scientists who don't even know each other. Yeah. So, I don't know who's gonna buy that coal of awesomeness. Thanks very kindly, Jack. Thanks to Jack. Jack just jumped in on fundraising. And that takes us down to cipher in here. $130 to go in fundraising for the evening. Let's go over now and check in with Jules out in Talibandiana. What's happening, Jules?
Hi there, Bob. Lots happening. So much is happening in this world, isn't it? You talked about Dakota Access tonight, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Lots of news.
Very definitely. Lots of news. Yeah. But you know, because I'm the little ray of sunshine that I am, I pointed out that there might be time for a quick congratulatory yell, but as even Dave Archambault, the chairman of the Standing Rock Rock Tribe, has noted, they're not going to go anywhere because this is not over.
Oh, I'm here for more of a standing, more of a little ray of hope for you, just a little bit more of a ray of hope for you. Energy Transfer Partners and
Sunoco
have come out in a statement stating that they aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, they said they're going to build it anyway, and the rest of us can pound sand.
Yeah.
And that is because it is cheaper to violate the law than it is to follow it.
Yep.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, start drilling in the middle of the night to drill that hole drill that tunnel under the river. But here's the question, okay. Jules. Here's the question. Given the production price of Bakken crude, I mean, I understand these people think that they can eat money. But how are they going to make this financially viable when Bakken crude isn't financially viable?
Okay, well, this is the situation. They made contracts with the people who are going to be supplying, who are going to be running their crude through this pipeline when prices were at $95 a barrel, $94, $95, $96 a barrel. And that was what was contract? The contract was for. Those contracts expire January 1st. So they can renegotiate the contracts, or they can drop the contracts. Sunoco had to buy out a large portion of Energy Transfer Partners because Energy Transfer Partners was going bankrupt already. Once those contracts come up, if companies start dropping, it's going to make more of a mess of this. More companies are going to start wanting to get out, or they're going to be going under. More banks are going to start pulling out. Bank in Norway, I think it has already divested all of their interest in these oil companies and is getting ready to pull out completely. And also, did you know that 66% of the current infrastructure in the Balkan area is not even being utilized?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are all hydrocarbon economic cycles are boom and bust. And there was a boom out there for a while, and now they are in the bust cycle.
Yeah.
Again, because of the price of oil. I mean, one of the reasons that Saudi Arabia did what it did with its production was to make the Bakken crude financially unviable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There aren't any signs out there right now that that's going to change.
No, it's not.
Although, you know, this is one of the I don't think I've ever experienced a time in my life, Jules, when there was so much uncertainty. I mean, even when George W. Bush stole the election in 2000, you still kind of knew who the Bushes were. I mean, they're crooks. And they'd steal the pennies off a dead man's eyes, but they wanted an America viable enough to keep making them rich. It feels like all bets are off with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, and I don't know what he's going to do. You know, all he has to do is piss off the Saudis, and the next thing you know. There's $100 a barrel oil. The Bakken crude gets up and running again, and he might just do that to get the Bakken crude up and running again, because I'm sure he's heavily invested in that too.
Oh, he is, but Hillary Clinton was also.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, That's troubling.
I mean, it's kind of like if you're in Washington, you're pretty much invested in it.
Well, I'm talking about deeply financially invested. Like, you know, Trump's got between $500,000 and $1 million in Energy Transfer.
Hillary Clinton is the person who signed the initial deal for Keystone XL to go through.
Yes, as Secretary of State.
After Bill Clinton went through and raked in a ton of money from the Canadian investors doing speeches across Canada.
Yeah, speaking tour money.
Yes. And conveniently, that went right across her desk, and she signed it. And they had quite a bit of investments in Keystone XL. You're not going to tell me that they aren't also invested in these other companies.
But the question is, why are we talking about? But the question is, why are we?
And it's not a matter of. I'm just saying that my point is that if you're in Washington, pretty much they're invested. I mean, they are getting money from these oil companies. Every one of these motherfuckers are getting money from these oil companies. Is my point. That's why I rolled it up.
Yeah, and the problem is that, well, as Boss Man Wayne said, the Clintons are pretty much done. You know, they'll continue to try to exert some influence, but their sun has largely set.
Oh, yeah. And my only point in bringing her up is that it doesn't matter who you are in Washington, you're getting paid off by these oil companies. And Trump is probably, I mean, he's just one of many that is, you know, deeply invested in this and wants to see this go through, you know. I don't think it depends on which side of the coin you're on. There are very few that aren't going to lose if this thing doesn't go through on the Washington level.
Quite possibly. Trump being president makes it, it makes what he thinks and what he wants a little bit more, important. But they're going to try. I mean, Energy Transfer Partners is going to try.
Yeah, and I guarantee you that you will not. You will absolutely not see the National Guard out there moving Energy Transfer Partners off the land.
No, that's what they
were told to leave. Absolutely will not see them out there.
No. They're not going to get flashbang grenades thrown. The pipeliners aren't going to get grenades thrown at them, and they're not going to get gassed, and they're not going to get hosed down in freezing temperatures with water cannons.
Oh, hell no. No, they won't. But the whole thing is this fucking pipeline does not need to be built. The infrastructure that is there is not being used. They are putting this thing, they are making this thing look like it has to be built, it has to be put in, and it has to be gone and done right now, and it doesn't even need to be built.
No, I mean, there's the larger issue of the oil needs to stay in the ground.
It's not even going to be used, at least not to capacity, and even if it were being used to capacity, you have this all this other fucking piping that's in the ground that's not being used. So what is the sense? Why put another freaking pipe in the ground that is going to leak? I mean, it's a waste. And with the amount of shifting that we have, the amount of seismic activity that we have right now on this earth, it is absolutely outrageous. If you look at what's going on in the Ring of Fire right now, it is crazy. If you look what's going on down through Oklahoma and in the sites near there right now, it is fucking nuts. And just having, it's going to spread. With more fracking that they're doing, it's going to continue to spread. These pipelines are not going to be stable with the fracking going on in those areas. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this shit out. I don't know why. I mean, I realize congressmen apparently aren't that bright when it comes to science stuff. But it doesn't take that much to go from point A to point B.
Yeah, and of course, all of this goes on to the, you know, anything they produce goes on to the global market. And you can't, for some reason or another, get the American people to understand that they're not going to see gas prices go down at the pump.
Bingo. And you can't get to the American public to see that, we are shifting our earth in a really, really, really bad fashion. I mean, not just the global warming part.
Oh, no. I mean, believe you me, I'm aware. I mean, there was a clean coal bill introduced in 2015 in this Congress for clean coal technology, which, of course, is not a scientific thing. It's an advertising slogan from the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, your point is well taken about everybody being influenced to one degree or another by some aspect, if not all aspects, of the hydrocarbon industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because would you care to guess who one of the co-sponsors of that clean coal bill was?
Manchin.
Well, yeah, I mean, but come on. No, I mean, that's easy. That's cheating. So is Heidi Heitkamp, I guess. But no. No, give me another co-sponsor.
Oh, let me see. When was this?
2015. Harry Reid wouldn't even let it breathe life. But Chuck Schumer is open to it now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, that makes sense. Chuck Schumer.
No, but give me another co-sponsor.
Oh, we'll see.
Quit reaching for the easy ones, Jules.
Oh, cold. I don't know, another co-sponsor. I can't even think of one right offhand that would be not easy.
How about Sherrod Brown, progressive hero of Ohio?
Oh, yeah, that would make sense, I suppose. That would make sense, yeah. It's sad, but it makes sense.
And it will be reintroduced in the upcoming Congress, and it will sail through. And here's the fun part about it. This is the real ha-ha-ha, yuck-yuck-yuck knee-slapper of it. Do you remember something that was called Waxman-Markey?
Can't say I do.
The Waxman-Markey bill, the climate change bill, it got passed in the House and then got killed in the Senate. It had, if I recall correctly, something on the order of $30 billion of corporate welfare for clean coal in it. But the coal companies and the United Mine Workers got together to kill it because they didn't want all that free money. The only, you know, the only hope, and I'm being as I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to the advocates of it. The only way clean coal ever works is if you're actually acknowledging the reality of climate change. That's the only way the technology makes any sense. Otherwise, you know, screw it and, you know, just burn it and never mind the scrub. You know, we've got all these coal ash dumps, Jules, because of EPA regulations that said we've got to scrub that shit out of the coal smoke because it's poisoning people. You know, not climate change,
oh, yeah.
Just straight up poisoning people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you know what we're doing overseas, too, with it, too.
Yeah, so it's a case of being damned by good intentions. But anyway, just to stick with the clean coal thing, so now they're going to have themselves a clean coal bill in the upcoming Congress, and they're going to throw government money at it, and here's the fun part. It's never going to work.
Well,
it
no, it
can't
work.
I
mean, it's not. How can it work? It's not. It's not real. I mean, you can't make something that's false true just by putting money into it and expecting it to work. That's not the way things are. Something that's not scientific, something that is not real, something that is not reality. You can't make a cartoon character come to life just because you throw money at the designer and the animators and say, make it come to life, turn into a human being. That doesn't work that way. It's the same with clean coal. I mean,
yeah,
you're not going to get it to happen.
Jen in Australia was guessing Al Franken.
Ah.
But and I wouldn't be surprised if he's on board with it, too.
Hmm. Good guess. Very good guess.
And again, that's another Manchin boondoggle.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea behind it, and this is where I get kind of bent out of shape. The idea of that phrase "clean coal," Jules, is the idea that somehow we can burn it without releasing any poisons. Okay? Right? But it's the when the coal is toxic in the extraction process.
Mm-hmm.
When people have to be poisoned in order to blast it, scrape it, gouge it out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It can never be clean.
Oh, yeah. But no, it can't. And when the byproduct goes back into, you know, ponds or whatnot, and those ponds leak and go into the groundwater, and most ponds break. And
Or just the stuff that goes into the air, Jules.
Yeah, I know.
The particulates that everybody breathes here,
mm-hmm.
that you can't get away from.
Think about what lands on the plants and causes the plants not to properly grow. You know, I think about, you know, the bees can't pollinate. You know?
Well, you can't grow anything on a mountaintop removal site anyway. Yeah, one of these days one of these days we got to get you here and we got to let you actually see one of these things. It'll change your life. You will turn into a full-throated 157% anti-mountaintop removal activist the first time you fly over one of these things. It's that profound. It really does. It changes your life. It's like flying over the Bakken fields, or more profoundly flying over the hellscapes of the Keystone tar sands, of mm-hmm. the tar sands.
Yeah. Well, my point is, you know, those particulates, those poisons, those pieces, those little tiny bits of poisons that are going into the air that people are breathing are landing on the plants, too, and are affecting the plants and the way the plants
It's been found in the soil, Jules. So the mm-hmm. plants take it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your half-runner green beans that you grow in your garden have poison in them. Your tomatoes have poison in them. Your potatoes have poison in them.
Environments reacting, the way the insects are behaving, the way the, the other ecology reacts.
Exactly. So,
overseas, where we're putting these plants, it is so bad that the coal dust, as it settles, it's actually making it so the plants don't flower. And what's happening then is people aren't going to be able to harvest crops, so they're going to go to the city, just like in the drought areas, which is going to cause more violence, more fights, more eruptions, more war, more migration.
All of which, somewhere along the way, is mighty good for business. Speaking of such, reminds me, I took a little road trip yesterday. I said I was going to do it. I did it. It was a total total shoestring effort. I went up and sat and watched a play performed at my alma mater, WVU, that had last been performed there 33 years ago when I was in it. And there's a whole sort of backward, turn backward, oh, time in your flight kind of aspect to it that I won't get into here. But Euripides' The Trojan Women remains a stunning commentary on the effects of war. And one of the things that I noticed, they had beautiful, beautiful information boards up outside the theater. And one of the commentaries was on the child character Astyanax, who is the son of Hector and Andromache. And of course, in the Iliad itself, Hector is probably the single most noble individual in the whole in the whole epic. He doesn't like what he's doing, but he knows he has to do it. Devoted family man, deeply in love with his wife. His wife is deeply in love with him. They have a beautiful child who will be the heir to the Trojan throne once Hector succeeds Priam. And, you know, you can read the play. Well, I think there's somewhere you can actually see the 1971 Katharine Hepburn version playing with her playing Hecuba, and it's stunning. But the point is, the Astyanax character is just a little boy, and the character that I played oh so many years ago comes on stage and takes him away to throw him off the walls of Troy so that there can never be another heir to the Trojan throne. And in the board outside the theater, in discussing Astyanax, they associated Astyanax with the photograph of the little boy sitting in the chair having been bombed in Syria.
Oh, my.
And the little boy's body washed up on the beach. And it is timeless. You know, the play was written as an act of protest against Athenian warmongering in the Peloponnesian War. And it caused it caused a stink there at that time, in that era. And it continues to be in its profundity. And it's heartbreaking. You know, when you get to the Andromache Astyanax scenes, if a few tears don't leak out of your eyes, you might want to have your tear ducts checked because they're broken.
Yeah, it really does rip you apart, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I was really, really proud of the student actors there. They did a magnificent job. I had a lovely conversation with the lady sitting next to me because she had been a former classics teacher, professor at WVU. I never had her for a class. I wish I had, because she was the teacher of Greek, and I never got my Greek. And that always made me very upset.
Oh, that's a shame.
In ancient Rome, you were a barbarian if you didn't have your Greek.
Well, of course. You barbarian, you.
I'm a barbarian.
Yeah, you're a barbarian.
See what we did there? Wait a minute. God damn it, I'm giving myself a cowbell for that. But it's good to get away.
See what you did there now?
Yeah, exactly. It's good. It's good. It was good to get away. It was good to sit there and ponder some deeply thinky stuff. And I would say so. The ironies kept piling up because, of course, once I made that connection via that photographic exhibit, you know, it's the Greeks who throw young Astyanax off, and in later years, the Byzantine Empire would be represented by a double eagle, a double-headed eagle. That double-headed eagle, as the Byzantine Empire, which considered itself Rome, as it fell in May of 1453 to Mehmet II and the Turks, thereafter the Russians considered themselves the keepers of the flame of Greek culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, the Greek Orthodox Church moved north and proselytized and converted the Russians and became the Russian Orthodox Church. There was always a deep back and forth between Greece and Russia and the Church. And so the Tsars adopted the Byzantine double-headed eagle. Well, a couple of years back, the Soviet Union having fallen, the Russian Federation adopted that double-headed eagle again. And so the little boy on the beach, the little boy seated in the chair with blasting dust all over him, And yes, the body of young Mythic Astyanax dashed to death on the rocks at the walls, at the base of the walls of Troy. All had as the calling card of their death that double-headed eagle. And when that dawned on me, I was like, hell, nothing changes.
Epiphany, huh?
Yep. And I guess this is a good season for those, right?
Yeah. Epiphany. The world goes around. It comes back around, doesn't it? Really does.
It does indeed.
I do agree. But, y'all got to keep hope no matter what. I mean, even with as nutty and screwy as this asshole's going to be.
You hang on to it because it's what motivates the resistance, and there must be resistance.
Exactly.
I saw where Ed Rabel posted something on his Facebook page earlier today about his fears for the future, mm-hmm. and for the future of children and grandchildren and coming generations. And I said, if there's one benefit to any of this, is that it makes the choice pretty stark and pretty clear. You can either collaborate or you can resist. And I've made my choice. I'm going to resist. And I think that goes pretty broadly for the Horn Family Community Congregation, too. And it's how we will keep each other from breaking down or falling apart or giving up in the coming wildly. I don't think the nation faced as much uncertainty in 1860 as it faces now.
No, I think that's sober. Thing right now. I think that's a big one thing right now. People are feeling a lot of stress, a lot of tension. I've seen so many people that are literally having breakdowns because of this election. And it's quite amazing the number of people that are having literally emotional breakdowns because of what's going on, almost mental collapses because of the stress that is being induced by the uncertainty, the fear. And, you know, it's really upsetting because what the right has done so successfully to garner their troves of followers has been to use fear to manipulate them. And you know what? It seems that they're doing the same to us now too. And that's really a shame that we're allowing that. I'm not going to allow it. I'm not going to let my life be lived with fear. And that's what I'm trying to encourage other people to do. It's you can't stand up in the fight if you're scared of what you're fighting. It doesn't work that way. Because if you're fearful of it, whatever you're fighting knows, and they have an advantage. And by gold, I will not give those motherfuckers an advantage. Period.
Yeah.
They want to play psychological games? You know what? I have a damn sight better way of doing it.
Well, we shall see. And again, you know, it's kind of like what happened in the latest brilliant Saturday Night Live cold opening, where mm-hmm. one of the two national security briefers says...
7 weeks.
Sir, 7 weeks. And Kenan Thompson just screams and... Oh, no, I'm okay. I just hadn't heard it expressed in weeks.
Yes. I did that. I actually used that cold opening this morning to lead into Dick Cheney's ridiculous comment that, Trump keeps tweeting, then we might not need you guys in reference to the press. What an asshole. I mean, it's not like he wasn't stupid in commenting, wasn't he? Was vice president.
Well, but that was also a not so subtle dig at the press to remind them that they were expendable. I stand by what I said a few nights ago.
Oh, yeah.
Anderson Cooper knows. Wolf Blitzer knows. George Snuffleupagus knows that at a word, Trump can unleash his hordes and they can be slaughtered. That's how fascism works. And of course, Jules, as proof positive of that, we have this latest story about so-called Pizzagate that happened in Washington, D.C., when economic anxiety broke out all over the... Well, it broke out at a pizza joint.
Mm-hmm.
The guy... I mean, Jesus. He took his Freedom Protector and started shooting inside a pizza place in D.C. because of something he heard on Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a... it was an allegation about what? About a claim that there was a Hillary Clinton child sex cult in the back of this pizza joint. Now, there's no truth to it at all. Nothing.
Of course not. Of course not. That's absolutely absurd. You'd have to be an absolute dumb cult.
But the Trumpansy. But the Trumpansy went all the way from North Carolina, Jules, to Washington, D.C., and shot up a place. And it's a miracle, I guess, that nobody got killed. And then gets taken into custody by the Capitol Police or the D.C. Police without receiving so much as a scratch, thus proving that the guy with the gun was a white guy with a gun.
Was a white guy.
And as far as I'm concerned, every Trump voter in the country has to own that moment. Because they unleashed and propagated the forces that led to that happening. And it will happen again, okay? Among other things, the gun goobers out there are celebrating because Trump... They say we'll eliminate gun-free school zones so that our schools will become even more than they already are free fire zones. And so I understand when you say that you're not going to be afraid, but that's some scary shit.
Yeah, but I also remind myself that these assholes are less than 25% of the population. They are the extreme minority.
You really think
and
that?
Yes.
Because I don't.
They are. They are the
because,
extreme
you know, Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos talking together, and I played the clip on the air, said alt-right is half of the base and probably a lot more of the base of the Republican Party.
They're full of shit. They are full of shit. And they're saying that to scare people. And I'll tell you what. The fucking alt-right, the fucking white supremacists, the neo-Nazis, the KKK are the minority in this country. And that is exactly where they need to be put. They need to be told that. They need to be shown that. And they need to be shoved back in their little cages.
And 25% of the electorate voted with them.
Yeah, if we let them show that we're scared of them... That's all they're going to keep doing is running over people. They're going to keep going out. They're going to keep harassing Muslims. They're going to keep trying to hurt African Americans. They're going to keep trying to deport people. That's all they're going to keep doing. They're going to try to keep showing their fucking asses because we are scared of them. We are scared to stand up against them.
Oh, I don't think I am. I don't think you are either. But I also don't take nearly the sunny view of the American electorate that you do, Jules. I think the election of Trump proves to us that there are millions of Americans. I mean, because look, okay, Trump voter, you're not a Klansman. You're not a white supremacist. You're not a neo-Nazi. You're not alt-right. Bullshit term. But you voted with him. You formed a coalition with him. You got under the sheets with him. You got in bed with him. And that makes you enablers and collaborators with them.
You know what we have? We have a majority of the population that doesn't fucking look at who they're voting with. I swear to fucking God, they don't. We live in a liberal bubble. We live in such a liberal bubble. You step out, you talk to your Republican friends.
Do I?
Yeah, how many of your Republican friends have you talked to?
I really don't have that many. I've got, you know, people I grew up with. I've got a couple of people that I was friends with in college. I'm surrounded by Trumpansies here.
Yeah.
And
you talk to any of them?
Oh yeah. It's not so much do I talk to them, it's do they talk at me? And they do.
Okay, do they talk to the ones that don't talk at you? Do you talk to the ones that stand in the corner and don't say a whole lot?
No. I mean,
there are a lot of them out there.
Yeah, and they didn't vote with
Trump because they thought that he was white supremacist, neo-Nazi.
No, they were okay, but they were okay if he was.
No, they didn't vote with him because they even thought that. They didn't even realize that. They voted with him because they just wanted to not vote for Hillary Clinton. That's all they cared about. They didn't have anyone else to vote for.
So,
but they felt it was their duty.
So do you think that along the way they heard grab them by the pussy and it didn't matter?
No, because they didn't hear a lot of this. There is a huge part of the population that doesn't hear a lot of this shit, that doesn't watch the news, that doesn't listen to the news. All they know is, oh, it's time to vote. Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. my preacher says I need to vote for Trump.
Yeah, basically.
But the preachers were talking about grabbing by the pussy and said, well, it's okay, because Jesus forgives.
And there's a large part of the population that doesn't go to church. They watch. What do you think people watch on TV right now? You think they watch the news?
I think a lot of Trumpansies watch a hell of a lot of Bill O'Reilly.
That's the 25% of the population, okay? That's the older folks. It's not a lot of young kids. What do you think families are watching right now? They're not watching the news. They're watching these fucking reality shows.
Okay.
They're watching Dancing with the Stars and The Voice and Empire and I don't know what this. I'm rattling off things that I've heard time and time again and over again from other people that are out there that aren't in this grouping of people that I'm always surrounded with. That I've talked to outside of the bubble. They didn't know who they were voting for. They didn't know what he stood for.
Then why did I see so many of them walking around in their "Make America Great Again" hats, and you know, going to his rallies and screaming "Build that wall"? In West Virginia, why were they saying he's going to bring back coal? If they knew absolutely nothing of
a specific part of the area where it's a vital part. He was promising a very vital, vital structure to your area. That didn't happen all across the country, though. He didn't promise jack shit around here.
Oh, but now you and other taxpayers are going to pay Carrier $7 million to fire 1,000 people.
$1 a day. And you know what? Huntington is 20 minutes away. A lot of those workers live right here in Fort Wayne. A lot of them live right here southwest Fort Wayne where I live. You know? So it's like, hey.
So they're losing their jobs. Are they just happy for the people who are keeping theirs?
Of course, you know, of course not. I mean, they want their factory to stay open. They want to know what the fuck is going on. No, they're not happy.
Do they realize they got screwed?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it just that Trump can only do so much? He's only a man.
No. They know they're getting screwed. They knew they were going to get screwed.
Do they know they're screwed well enough to never vote for another goddamn Republican as long as they live?
A lot of people around here figure they're going to get screwed no matter which way they vote. They do it because they feel like they're obligated to.
Well, I think, like I said, I think you have a more hopeful vision of the American electorate than I do.
I have a different view of it because I have talked to so many people on the other side that just don't have a fucking clue what they voted for.
So, okay, when you talk to them and you explain to them who they voted for, do they say things like, gee, now that you've told me, I wish I hadn't?
They're dumbfounded. They're absolutely dumbfounded. They're like, I don't understand why all this stuff is going on. It's like, don't you realize, you know, what all was being said at these rallies and stuff? No, I never heard a word about it.
And then, you know, I mean, have you tried to
they get food, you know, they get their food, they watch a little TV with their kids, they get their kids to bed, they're exhausted, they get, you know, paperwork done for the house, they get to bed, they don't have time for the news.
And so when you smarten them up and you explain to them about the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists, do they say, gosh, I sure am sorry to be in bed with those people?
They're like the motherfuckers. They better not be doing that in my neighborhood.
But if they do, but if they do it in somebody else's neighborhood.
No, I mean, in their neighborhood is, you know, everywhere, you know. I mean, I don't know how many people that I've seen, Republicans, Democrats alike, wearing the little pins, the little safety pins, you know?
Yeah.
I see probably as many people that I know voted Republican with those little safety pin things on my in my Facebook grouping from way back as I do the Democrat side. As a matter of fact, on Facebook, I have probably 10 times more Republican contacts than I do Democratic.
And? I mean...
And so I see a lot of what they say. I see a lot of what the non-radical ones say. And they are just absolutely appalled. They think these people that Trump is trying to put in are absolutely absurd when they do hear about it.
Well, then you're painting a potential picture of maybe him not getting a second term.
He's not going to get a second term. He absolutely is not going to get a second term.
You think there'll be a palace coup and Mike Pence will wind up running in 20?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm not sure that Trump's going to make it through the full term, to be honest with you. I really don't.
Well, like I said, I think the greatest risk to Trump is that he'll have a stroke over something Alec Baldwin says on Saturday Night Live.
That's possible.
But we also, you know, we also have an interesting world coming at us, Jules.
Yeah, we do.
Because
we have a very interesting world
last,
coming at us.
Last week, the statement was made that there are no such thing as facts anymore. And this weekend, when Governor Pencil Neck Geek got called on this the lie about the 3 million illegal voters.
Mm-hmm.
His answer was to say that it is refreshing that Trump speaks his mind.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we impeached one president over a consensual blowjob, but he can lie about something as serious as the integrity of the franchise, and it's just refreshing.
And you realize Pence was going to get slammed out of office if he stayed governor, if he ran for governor again.
Right.
People in Indiana hate his fucking guts.
And now, though, he's very excited, and some of those self-same people in Indiana are very excited, because Trump has announced that he will sign the First Amendment Defense Act.
Yep.
Which has nothing to do with the First Amendment and everything to do with religious bigotry.
Yep.
You know, it will be a national law to make sure that purveyors of shitty pizza don't have to cater, you know, a gay wedding.
Yeah. People have to realize, though, that Trump doesn't make these laws by himself.
No, there's going to be a Congress.
Yeah, exactly. And not everyone in Congress, even the Republicans, I mean, there are a lot of Republicans that aren't standing with Trump.
Well, the only way to test that is to do so empirically, and that will happen as soon as the new Congress is sworn in.
Yeah.
And when something like the First Amendment Protection Act, or whatever it's called, when that thing sails through the House and Senate, we may have to reevaluate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's... God, it's so bizarre. Kellyanne Conway went to a costume party this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And she showed up as Superwoman?
Wonder Woman.
Superwoman, according to this story.
Superwoman. Okay.
I see the pictures. I don't see a golden lasso.
I read it as Wonder Woman, as the story that I had read. So,
One of the pool reporters asked Trump who he came to the party as, and he said, "Me."
Pointed at himself. Me. Yeah. Arrogant fuck, yeah, he is. But see, that's where the Dems need to take advantage of it. He is such a narcissist. They need to use that. God, they need to use that.
But then again, as Will Rogers said, I am not a member of an organized political party. I am a Democrat.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm telling you, the Dems are really missing it if they don't use his fucking weaknesses against him, because he has so many of them. I mean, so many good ones that they could just fuck with him with. I mean, that's what he's doing with the press right now. That's what he's doing with the Republicans right now. He is fucking with them. That's what he's doing with the American people right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this whole tour, you know, this tour that he's doing of the Midwest, you know? What is that? That's prancing about. That's exactly what he's going to be doing, prancing about, puffing his chest out, and, you know, that's the only way that he feels comfortable. You look at him when he's in a serious situation, he looks like he's fucking scared to death. You look at his body language is really, really fucked up.
Well, I mean, hard to sort out the. It's kind of hard to sort out all the upfuckedness, one from another. just got a note from David in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line: KKK. Evil spirit commandeered my TV. It jumped from the Steelers Giants to a Kellyanne Cruella Conway, swivel headed psycho tripping, cauldron stirring, tongue tangling, exorcism looking torrential bullshit ritual. that took more talent than you know just to read all of that. Well, Jules, you have yourself a lovely evening. I do appreciate you calling.
I had to mute on that.
That's okay.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
That was too great. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Jules calling from Talibandiana. A couple of notes coming in. Disagreement with Jules' position coming from Asa. He says, that's a complete bullshit argument that they didn't hear anything Trump said during the campaign. If that's the case, how come they heard all the shit being thrown at Hillary enough to go in and vote against her? Asa says, I'm sick of people who say Trumpansies don't care about Trump's lies. Trumpansies do know about his lies, and they do care that he's a sleazy liar, and they like it. Some of us refuse to accept that there's a certain slice of society that actually likes a sleazebag tax dodger. To them, he's a winner because he can lie, cheat, and sleaze, slime, and get away with it. Kim in New Jersey says, yes, he will be reelected. Remember Reagan? Remember W? Two mega assholes. Both reelected. Jack points out, Democrats win when more people come out to vote. Democrats have been the victims of voter suppression. Do you think the Dems are on the move to register people and get out the vote for the next election any more than they have for the past few? No. Not a chance. Arthur says, I think Trump is like Bush. Someone else, Pence, Ivanka, in-laws, Bannon, will do the heavy lifting and steer him in the direction they want. I think that's... Ivanka and what's-his-face, her husband, are moving to D.C., but melanoma and boron aren't? Go figure. Yeah. By the way, thanks. I need to catch up with fundraising thanks this evening. Thanks very kindly to David and to... David and Glenn and Fab, thank you very kindly, one and all. We have met and exceeded the fundraising goal for the evening, and that is a deep, that's a big, deep sigh of relief where I'm concerned. Thank you very kindly. Fab, did I have a show on me even? So thank you, one and all. Very, very kindly. Note coming from Jen in Australia. In regard to the question, how does this happen? Jen says, I just watched the now well-circulated interview of a California woman who was savagely foreclosed upon by the man who is now tapped to run the Treasury. Mnuchin, the swamp drain is plugged up with Mnuchin and Bannon. And now she's whining about the man she voted for, this woman is. Really? You voted for that because you say you wanted change? Change? Okay, let me see. One wants change. One is, say, tired of eating burgers, so they weigh two options. In one's right hand is a turd, in the left, a salad. So she picked the turd and is now shocked, I tell you, shocked. She could have voted for, fucking Bernie Sanders, but no, she wanted to mix things up and is now surprised that an ass-mouthed turd, the equivalent of one of those blown-up micro-photos of some monster-like tooth parasite worm genus and species anus self-aggrandizing, wants to finish off what's left of her mangled life? Sorry, but I'm having a really hard time maintaining the sympathy I once had for her. And then again, Jen points out in regard to melanoma not going to D.C., I prefer a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Fifth Avenue. Jen says, huh, finally melanoma figured out a way to get out of his bed. Oh, you made me think of Trump sex. Oh, Jen. Oh, yuck. Bleh, 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 bleh. Yeah, VT in the chat room saying, never mind Reagan and Bush. Remember Nixon? Yeah, he got reelected, too. Let's go check in with Scott and Punky. What's happening, Scott? You're home from the grocery store.
Hello. I'm at home at beautiful Shea Guru with the lovely and exciting Punky and the lovely and exciting Chirps. Chocolate Chirps, the adopted cat. And it's much better calling from here than the grocery store where I called from the other day for obvious reasons. I can
sounded a little busy in Ralph's.
Oh, God. I guess as the holidays approach, people get frantic, you know? But I stocked up on stuff that I needed, so I won't have to go back for, you know, maybe the better part of a week. But I heard, I was late to the party tonight, and I heard the last bit of the call from Jules, and I liked what she said, some of it. I mean, some of it I didn't necessarily agree with, but I still liked it. And I want to bring to the attention of the folks out there, the fun lovers and truth seekers, there's a petition being prepared for delivery on the 7th, which is the day after tomorrow, sponsored by an organization called SocialSecurityWorks.org. And basically, the notion involved is to sign the petition, add your name to the people who want to tell Paul Ryan and the GOP House and Senate both that we do not wish that they destroy Social Security and Medicare. So I'm sure if folks go to the website, they can find that. And the deadline to sign the petition is Wednesday. Is that Wednesday? Yeah, Wednesday the 7th. So get on it quickly and add your name. And I bring that up mainly because I'm, you know, one of those, you know, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Now, it may be that when the petition shows up, the people in charge of the House and the Senate will put it through the shredder, you know, or just dump it in the trash because they probably don't recycle. But those who participate will have the satisfaction of knowing that instead of doing something, they did do a little, instead of doing nothing, they did do a little something. So that's where I am in the matter of that.
No, I certainly don't think there's any harm in it.
No, there may not be help, but there's certainly no harm.
Well, I mean, the sad thing is if you, I go back to that statement from last week, there are no such things as facts anymore. If you say to Paul Ryan, I don't want you to kill Social Security, Paul Ryan's response is, well, we're not going to kill Social Security. We're just going to put more freedom in it.
And, well, yeah, I get that.
Because as we say here in the Hill, Scott, the truth ain't in them.
Well, but see, that's not totally unexpected. I mean, that, as a matter of fact, you count on that response because that's where he's been coming from in his Ayn Randian way for as long as he's been able to read anything beyond Dr. Seuss, right?
Well, technically, I think we would say that that's where he's been coming from ever since he stopped needing to draw Social Security, because, of course, he did.
Yeah, that's right. Didn't he? When his dad died, didn't they survive, he and his mother?
On Social Security.
Yeah, exactly. But the point of it is even if it doesn't make a whit of difference, if millions of people can let, at least, at the very least, let the Congress know that we are aware of what they're up to, that could give them pause. And actually, in the email that I got from Social Security Works earlier today, let me see if I can find that real quick. they mentioned that a couple of Republicans have, are cracks starting to show in the Republican plan to destroy Medicare? And according to the email of Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, Republican senator, has mentioned that she is not at all comfortable with the idea of messing it up in the way that they wish to do it. And she's joined a list of a growing list of Senate Republicans, including Orrin Hatch, Lamar Alexander, and John McCain, who are kind of raising the red flag saying, wait, let's not act irresponsibly here and do something that will not only hurt people, but it won't have anywhere near the effect that we expect that it was supposed to. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, you mentioned Susan Collins, and, you know, I don't just sit here trying to be a little ray of sunshine. It's just who I am, Scott. That woman scares me to death. And there I am being scared again.
Yeah.
But she scares me to death precisely because the for-profit media are forever ballyhooing how Susan Collins is a moderate Republican, you know, because she's not, you know, because every time she stands up on the floor of the Senate, she's not holding a snake and swigging strychnine.
Or a snowball.
Right. That too. And then, but then, you know what she does? Every single time she votes the Republican Party line. I don't know how you get to be an outlaw maverick moderate, and at the same time, all you ever do is vote with the snake handlers and the strychnine swiggers.
Well,
as Jug of Punch points out in the chat room, Olympia Snow was the same way.
Okay, but in defense of Senator Susan Collins, I'm sure that some of the motivation behind her jumping on board with the Republican majority has to do with the fact that she's not the leader of the Senate. In other words, she's at the mercy of Yurt the Turtle or Yurtle the Turtle or what, Mitch McConnell, who is the leader of the Senate at this point. And there is sometimes a price to be paid if you're too much of a naysayer or a maverick. And
there's no getting around the fact that Mitch McConnell is a vindictive bastard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you look back to the days of LBJ, who in his day in the 50s was the Senate majority leader back when the Democrats were running the Senate, he understood that there are some Republicans who will cross the aisle. This is back then, of course. But he also understood that for whatever reason, some Republicans and even a lot of Southern Democrats were not in a position with their persona or their constituency back in those days to be on board, let's say, with the Civil Rights Bill. Okay, the big and the voting rights bill. And LBJ took that into account. He would rather them be on board, but he understood if they couldn't be. Well, the dynamic has changed in this day and age. It's not about being on board or not being on board or being your own person if you're a Republican. It's about being on board or you risk influence. You risk your seat on a committee that you would prefer to serve on. There are a lot of subtle ways and not so subtle ways that the leadership of both the House and the Senate make their influence known and keep those senators and representatives in line. And to the extent that we can behave in a manner that's consistent with changing that, and it may take a good number of years to do it, we need to also be about that, I think.
I don't think that's out there. But how does it play out in practical terms, Scott?
Well, tomorrow it may not play out at all. Even Wednesday, when they deliver the petition, it will not play out in as meaningful a way as we would prefer. But it's like the mule that wouldn't do anything. If you take the 2x4 and apply it squarely between the eyes of the mule, that will get his attention.
I think the word you're looking for is judiciously apply, yes.
Yeah, okay. But see, the trap that I refuse to fall into is the... You remember Hee Haw, back when it was on CBS and then later in syndication?
All too well, yes.
They used to have a bit where it was Archie Campbell, Grandpa Jones, Roy Clark, and Gordy Tapp. And they were all sitting on the front porch with their jugs of moonshine, singing Gloom, Despair, Agony on Me. Yeah. Deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, we'd have no luck at all. Okay? And people who have seen the show know what I'm talking about. And it seems easy or convenient to fall into the trap of there is no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no tunnel. And even if there is a tunnel and there is light, it's just an oncoming train. Some of that may be true, but to the extent that another possibility exists that we do, I mean, we didn't all shrivel up and die on election night. Okay, I hope we didn't. Right now, we're in one or more of these stages of grief, I think. Okay.
Well, and that's a question that I answered earlier from Jen. You know, I think we will see activism. I think come January it'll ramp up, but there is so much uncertainty right now, Scott.
Oh, I know, and I don't.
People really don't know how to resist.
Well, one way that resistance shows up is once all of these nominations for the cabinet have become official, then comes the part about them appearing for their confirmation hearings. And if people do not become involved in that, then anything could happen, okay? And some of it may still happen, but I think we've got a chance to deny these people, some of them, a successful nomination. I mean, a successful confirmation. And if we're not about doing that, then yeah, we will be singing Gloom, Despair, etc.
And I've gone through the entire program, and we're almost at the end. And just because attention must be paid, the Walter Scott jury, a 11 white, 1 black jury, deadlocked and was dismissed and a mistrial declared today.
Yeah.
Even though there was video footage of the killer cop shooting him in the back as he ran away. And what a hung jury means in this case, 6 white men, 5 white women, 1 black man, is that that jury watched all of that and not only considered murder in the first degree, or whatever the top charge was, they considered the lesser included, I think, as well.
Yeah.
And couldn't even, shooting a man in the back running away, could not deliver even so much as a voluntary manslaughter conviction on such compelling evidence.
I got it. Believe me, I got it. I was dismayed when I heard that today when I woke up. So I guess the bottom line is there is much to be done, and we each need to take our part in doing it, I guess is what I'm saying. And if it looks too big, just remember, you eat an elephant. You can eat an elephant, but you've got to do it one bite at a time. Yeah.
Yeah. The competing metaphor is it's like an oyster. The more you chew it, the bigger it gets.
Yes, exactly. Okay, Bob, I know time.
Have a good one, Scott. Take care.
You too, man.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks so much to all of our contributors for getting to the fundraising goal and a little bit more tonight. Thank you very much indeed. That means there's going to be a little bit of bill paying going on tonight. Yay! And thank you to all of you, our whole family community congregation, who engage in this ongoing dialogue. And, you know, please, tell your friends. Tell them there's something special going on here, because this is special. And let's grow the community, because we're going to need places to talk in the next 4 years. And this is one of those places where people get more of a chance to talk than just about anywhere else. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.